There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Second hour of the show live from Brest, where the game is always on. It is The Grill. The big thanks to Hire and all the team from Kick Cancer here in the region. They have stuck around. They've set up the challenge, the bin challenge, to help raise awareness for testicular and prostate cancer here in the region. It's called Kick Cancer. Take on the challenge and then post it and challenge three others as well. Hashtag Kick Cancer to find out more online. Do get involved in that one. And if you are in and around or anywhere near Barasti, come on down and the team will show you how it's done. Let's get to the football now. I've got a couple of games, early games for you. There's that early game over in Spain where Matias Oliveira has taken the lead for Getafe against Eibar in the first half of that one. That was 1-0. In fact, 1-0s everywhere at the moment in all our early kickoffs. Chris McCarty.
Yeah, let's start in the English Premier League if we can. The early kickoff is at the Hawthorns. It is a relegation threatened West Bromwich Albion, buoyed by their victory at Old Trafford against Manchester United last weekend. They're taking on a Liverpool side who have grown in confidence in the past couple of months. There's this new steely determination about Liverpool, in my opinion. They're into the semi-finals of the UEFA Champions League. 36 minutes on the clock in this one. It is West Brom 0, Liverpool 1. Danny Ings on the score sheet. An opportune finish from the Liverpool striker. It was from a corner. West Brom, though, Darren Moore, the caretaker boss, will be, well, disappointed to say the least, with his side's defending. Simply put, they should have done a lot better, and just as I say that, West Brom miss a gilt-edged opportunity to level things up. Jay Rodriguez inches away from putting home across from James McLean from the left wing. Darren Moore showing encouragement to his side. So that's West Brom 0, Liverpool 1. Up in Scotland as well, Tom, we are, or certainly we thought we'd be crowning Scottish champions today. Celtic are at Easter Road to take on Hibernian. Victory for the boys, and they will secure a seventh successive Scottish Premiership title. But Hibs haven't read the script, I don't think, because it's Hibernian 1, Celtic 0. It is the Kiwi striker Jamie McLaren who is on the score sheet for Hibs, scoring after 24 minutes. So the fizzy stuff might have to stay on ice for Celtic because, 36 minutes gone in that one. It's Hibs 1, Celtic 0.
We'll keep an eye on the football for you. Just watching the West Brom game on the big screen down here at Barasti. It's a big unit, isn't he, old Darren Moore?
You would not mess.
Big unit.
With Darren Moore. He looks more like a front rower, doesn't he, than a centre-half. He was no-nonsense, to say the least, and he's a big figure. He's a big presence on that touchline, and he's hoping that he can inspire his troops to come from behind. And if they were to win this, which is a long way away from being a goal down, if they were to win it, they breathe new life, and who knows, we've seen crazier things happen in football.
It's interesting, because I was watching him, and you see so many sort of styles, don't you, on the sidelines from managers and things like that. Those that like to come out in the tracksuit, those that like to come out in the suit, those that like to come out in a big jacket. He's just come out in a really tight t-shirt, and it just sort of sets a precedent, doesn't it? And there's not an ounce of fat on him, you know, and he just looks like a unit not to be messed with.
Yeah, it sets the tone, doesn't it? Jurgen Klopp won't mess with him, the referee won't mess with him, his own players won't mess with him, and he's living and breathing every kick, he's kicking every ball, he's heading every ball out there, because he's, as you said a little earlier, Tom, he's West Brom through and through, and he just wants, well, he wants a victory, he wants a good performance, and he wants to try and pull off the great escape.
It'd be nice to see them, obviously, the suggestion would be that they're too far gone in terms of where they are at the moment, but it'd be nice to see him get a little more of an opportunity in the Premier League, but if not, then with West Brom down in the Championship next season. Why? Because there is so much chat, isn't there, about the lack of English managers in the top flight at the moment, and then add on top of that black English managers as well. It is extraordinary to see him given more opportunity.
Absolutely, and it's a big issue. I know we've had Dwight York on Sports Tonight, and he's voiced that in not too uncertain terms. He said, listen, the opportunities are simply not there. We saw Jamie Floyd Hasselbank sacked by Northampton a few weeks back. I think, and I could be wrong on this, and 4001, if you can trump me on this one, Keith Curl and Chris Hughton are the only two black managers in the footballing leagues, from Premier League down to League Two. That's not enough. That's not good enough. And there's Darren Moore, hopefully staking a claim. But let's hope he does it in merit. You want people to get jobs on merit, and he's done a great job so far. That you'll be remembered fondly for a victory at Old Trafford. And even if they go down, Tom, I think he's shown enough in the last few weeks, and hopefully he will over the next few weeks, to stake a real good, genuine claim to take that job long term.
Let's get to the rugby. Carlos van Rijsselveld is keeping an eye on the lives.
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you, it's the kickoff of the semi-final of the Challenge Cup. Of course, this game's decided. We'll take on your beloved Gloucester in the final. And what I can tell you is Cardiff Blues taking on Pau. And Cardiff Blues have just scored a try through Gareth Anscombe, converted by Jared Evans. Cardiff Blues 7, Powell 0, 8 minutes played.
Before anyone takes, Tom, I've thought of another one. Chris Powell.
Oh, okay.
Former Charlton, England left back. He is at Southend, I think he is. So that's 3. I'll have a think. 4-0-0-1 if you've got another.
A couple of weeks into, I mean, several weeks into the Super Rugby season this year. Some changes, obviously, at the beginning of the season. Are you liking what you're seeing with Super Rugby this year?
Tom, I don't know. I think the problem with Super Rugby at the moment is the attendance has been absolutely terrible at all stadiums. And I kind of think that Super Rugby, in my opinion, has weakened a little bit, especially when you see all these players moving into the Northern Hemisphere. And myself, as a big, big rugby fan, I've kind of been focused on the top 14, you know, where they got all these major international players. But I think the format of fewer teams is working better, but I still think they need to cut it. I still think there's too many teams in Super Rugby at the moment. Saying that, though, the games have been very, very exciting. A lot of running rugby, a lot of positive rugby, and I think which is all good. But of course, the big talking point in this morning's newspapers, of course, of Super Rugby is Eddie Jones has been out and about shopping, and the man he's shopping for is Brad Shields, of course, the Hurricanes captain. And he's looking to include him in the England side, which will be touring South Africa on the 9th of June. Now, of course, England do have the rule that they do not select players that are playing outside the country. However, if Brad Shields gets permission from the New Zealand Rugby Union to release him to go play for England, he will be joining Wasps on his return from that tour. So very, very interesting. Eddie Jones looking at New Zealand to strengthen that England team for next year's Rugby World Cup in Japan.
If it's not South Africa for the cricket team, it's New Zealand for the rugby team in England. I shouldn't laugh. Of course, I'm Scottish and we have to find players wherever we possibly can.
Don't worry, Donovan, which got England cap last week, is South African and he's a loose forward. So, Eddie Jones just bulking.
He's joining Wasps, though, isn't he?
Sorry?
He's joining Wasps.
He's joining Wasps. Yeah, that's what they're saying. He will join Wasps. But the only thing is, his New Zealand contract runs to August. So he will have to get permission from the New Zealand Rugby Union if they are obviously not considering to select him for the All Blacks coming this year or for the World Cup next year. So
has he played for the All Blacks?
No, he's not being capped for the All Blacks. But he still has to be released by the New Zealand Rugby Union, and now they are waiting for a call on that. If he does get released, he will be joining the England team to go tour South Africa, and then he'll be coming back into England playing for us.
How good is he? I must admit, I've not seen too much of Brad Shields, Carl, so what is he and how good is he?
Well, he's the captain for the Hurricanes. They've won the Super Rugby title with him in it, and of course.
What position does he play?
Flanker. Okay. Number six, yeah. So,
a problem position for England.
Absolutely, and I think that's why, you know, Eddie Jones has,
cast the net.
Cast his net a little bit wide into the Southern Hemisphere. And, it will be interesting to see, Tom, if he does get that permission and if he will be part of the England squad come the tour to South Africa in June.
Yeah, because they have had a few problems there, haven't they? Nathan Hughes hasn't really sort of solidified his position. Courtney Laws, some people suggesting that he should be playing on the flank rather than the second row. Others not in agreement with that one as well.
Yeah, but Courtney Law is also injured at the moment, which doesn't bid well for England. And, of course, they are looking for a little bit of depth. Vanipola has been injured for most of the season. I think he's been crucial to the England team. They just don't seem to have that forward momentum when he's not in that loose trio. So I guess, you know, if it's within the rules of the game and there is opportunity and he wants to represent England, of course, he qualifies through his parents being English. I say let the man play where he wants to.
But there is the potential, I suppose, for this to become ugly between two rugby boards. And I suppose the challenge here is the role that World Rugby play, because if the RFU and New Zealand RFU don't see eye to eye, then how do you move forward with this one? Surely it's got to be a World Rugby issue.
Yeah, I think, you know, the big thing is England have stated the claim that they will not select players that are not playing within the country. If you theoretically look at it, he has not been playing in the country, so he will be playing for England before he actually starts playing for an English club within the country. So to me, they are kind of bending the rules. They're not breaking it, they're bending it, but to me it also doesn't quite seem fair on an English player that's been playing in the country for a long time and could possibly qualify to play for England, and now his spot's been taken by somebody else that qualifies because his parents are English. So to me, I still don't think that the rugby board have quite got it down to a T, but as you say, if it's within the rules, I guess they can do it.
All sorts of rugby to look forward to throughout the afternoon.
Yes.
Games are underway at the moment. Tell us what the score is now.
Yeah, what I can tell you is, of course, Cardiff Blues are taking on Powell. That's the first of the semi-finals, or should I rather say the second of the semi-finals. Cardiff Blues are leading Pau 7-0. That's, of course, in the Challenge Cup. And the European Cup semi-final, the first of those semi-finals, of course, Leinster take on Scarlets this afternoon. That kickoff is at 6:30. Quite interesting there is that Lee Halfpenny has moved on to the wing for Scarlets. So, as you say, the first of those semi-finals. Tomorrow, there's another big one. Racing 92 take on Munster. So, some very, very good rugby coming up, Tom. And then in Super Rugby, the Bulls take on the Rebels at 5 o'clock this afternoon. That game, of course, live for Pretoria. And the Sharks taking on the Stormers at 7:15. That game live from the Shark Tank in Durban.
What's going to get our friend Mike Phillips on the phone to ask about Scarlets? Obviously a team he's played for in the past and knows very, very well. I was going to ask her for his thoughts, and I thought, what's the point? I know exactly what the answer is going to be. I was going to ask him, if they've got a chance today, he'll say no because he's not playing.
Yeah, well, I was about to say, don't call him because he didn't get the call up. I did check the starting lineups, and yeah.
Phil, Mike, are you watching it? Are you watching it?
His name has not appeared on the starting sheet, so yeah.
Listen, we are going to take a little breather here. We're broadcasting live from Brasto, where the game is always on. We want to reflect more on the Arsene Wenger story in just a few moments' time. If you've got any comments or reactions to the news about Arsene Wenger saying adieu for the very final time from Arsenal Football Club, what's next for Arsenal, what's next for Arsene, then please do share your thoughts with us by texting them to us on 4001.
This is The Grill. Get involved with Dubai Eye on Facebook.
Let's talk cricket very quickly. Indian Premier League underway at the moment, as it has been over the last couple of weeks. Kolkata Knight Riders, KKR, are in action against the Kings 11 Punjab. And it is Kolkata Knight Riders who are currently 174 for 5 with 2.2 overs remaining. Royal Challengers Bangalore take on the Delhi Daredevils a little later on in Bangalore. So we'll have details of that one for you before the start at 6:30 this evening. Meanwhile, over in the United Kingdom, the County Championship is underway. Yorkshire taking on Notts. Surrey entertaining Hampshire. Hampshire trailing Surrey by 68 runs with 3 wickets remaining. They're currently 143-7. It's raining down in Somerset. Twas ever the case. So they're taking on Worcestershire at the moment. So that game has been delayed. Essex taking on Lancashire. Essex leading Lancs by 88 runs with 7 wickets remaining. Into Division 2, where there are games between Northamptonshire and Warwickshire. Leicestershire against Sussex. Gloucester take on Glamorgan. Durham are at home to Kent. And Derbyshire taking on Middlesex. Middlesex trailing Derbyshire by 124 runs with 2 wickets remaining. Ben Stokes has been in good form in his IPL. He's a sort of perfect fit, isn't he, our Ben Stokes, for the IPL?
Absolutely, tailor-made. There's a reason why he was the most expensive signing. Again, Tom, he is belligerent with bat in hand and with the ball, despite the fact he always seems to come a cropper in the final innings. When he's throwing the ball for the last innings for bowling, he can pick up wickets, can Ben Stokes. And we know about the personal problems that he's got. We know, when is that trial, incidentally? Is that?
I don't know. It keeps getting put off, doesn't it? I mean, I don't understand. I don't understand why it takes so long, but it keeps getting adjourned and he doesn't have to turn up.
I'm lost on it as well, but of course he's doing
June, I think, now. Next hearing's June.
That's after the IPL. The IPL wraps up when? Next month, end of next month. Yeah. So he'll be done and dusted with his commitments in the IPL. But yeah, he's doing his talking with the bat and ball. And yeah, undoubtedly he is. He's one of those players that's got the X factor. Whether he would have made that much of a difference in the Ashes, that's, I guess, a moot point. But yeah, no doubt about it. In the IPL, it's a format that is set up beautifully for Ben Stokes.
Yes. You been watching much of the IPL, Carlos, or not?
Not at all. To be honest with you, I haven't really been following it. As I said, I've been on the west side of the world, and the time difference there doesn't really allow you to watch it. But quite interesting this week, Chris McCarthy. What am I hearing about a 100 ball game?
Yeah,
this
bizarre.
This new rule that they're wanting to bring in, which, honestly, do we need another format of cricket?
No, it would be my answer. Yeah. Again, I don't want to be accused of being a fuddy-duddy, and I am open to change and open to new formats. But the ECB there, that smacks of, they missed the boat with the IPL. There's the Indian Premier League, there's the Big Bash, there are numerous T20 tournaments going on, the County Championship, the ECB, etc. They took an age almost to get something put into market, and it looks as if that boat has sailed, and now they've come up with this 100 ball format that will launch in 2020, men and female. Essentially, it's 15 overs, and then they throw in a 10 ball over at the end to make it up to 100, but it just seems ill-advised, ill-conceived. It's, unfortunately, another case of the suits getting it badly, badly wrong, in my opinion.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, at the end of the day, what do you want to call it into, to change it into a baseball contest? I mean, we do like to see big sixes being hit and so forth, but I kind of think that will really I don't know, take the sting out of it.
A little bit, yeah. I just think that it's one of those ones that you keep coming up with ideas, you keep trialing and erring and hoping that something eventually sticks, and that's that idea itself smacks of that. I've been on social media looking at the not the fallout as such, but the reaction to it, and it's fair to say that the majority of people have been ridiculing it. It just seems, as I say, just a little ill thought out. I don't know your thoughts on it, Tom. I mean,
how far do you go with this whole approach at the moment? I mean, it just seems to be getting shorter and shorter and shorter. We saw the T10 tournament launched here not so long ago as well. You know, we thought T20 was a short format. T10 takes it to a new, a completely new approach, doesn't it? So it's gonna be interesting to see this. It just seems to me that, again, what do you need? You have to look to differentiate yourself, and you look to do it. And the way we're doing it is by getting shorter and shorter and shorter, to the point where, what's the point in turning up?
Yeah.
I mean, would you pay money to go and watch a maximum of 200 balls being bowled? Because that'd be it, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And that's assuming that they get through both innings fully.
True. I mean, to me, I think they should rather look at ways of improving the five-day game. I mean, they've brought in the But you understand what I'm saying, Tom. Rather try and improve the current formats that we've got instead of bringing in another format. And as you say, you might not even be able to watch all 200 balls, for that sake, because the bowlers might be, or the batsmen might be bowled out before. So, to me, I don't feel the game needs another format. I'd rather say, let's try and improve on the current formats that we've got.
Your thoughts would be appreciated on this one, 4001. I know that it's going, you know, it's like the whole T20 success, isn't it? Bring people in after work, you know, so you can sort of fit it in. And yet, the beast has grown further than that. You know, they're not doing it after work in the evenings as well. You're pretty much getting T20 games throughout the day, throughout the summer as well. So they've seen the commercial value and benefit of the shorter format. But there must be a line. Surely there is a line.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you're seeing there is, Tom, you're completely right to say that we're now seeing T20 become much more prevalent. It's much more accessible on the television screens. And that is because they're selling out, right? The money, the interest is there. I know that the TV rights over in Australia switch from Channel 9 to Channel 7. Cricket is sport right now, is big business. And You can get a little bit too much of it. I love my football. You boys know that. But I'm not fatigued per se, but there's so much on. Now the launch of 7:45 games in the UK on a Saturday night. Give me my Saturday night off, for goodness sake, because it just becomes, you find yourself just each waking moment watching football or watching some sport. Now, I love it, and I'm not really complaining about that, but it's just, and it's the same with T20 as well. You can have too much of a good thing, and they've got to be very careful with the bosses, and it's the ghost with the ECB here with this 100-ball idea as well. You start losing interest from fans because they don't know quite what they're watching. Is it a 50-over? Is it a test match? Is it a T20, a 100-ball, T10? It's just too much. Simplify it.
Your thoughts, please. Do get in touch with the show. We're not seeing other games do it, are we? Or are we seeing other games do it as
golf.
Well?
Golf are changing up. Keith Pelley's, he's looking into that crystal ball of his. And again, he's throwing stuff at the wall, to use that analogy, and hoping something sticks. I don't quite think they've got it right yet. Super Sixes didn't quite work out. And, you know, Keith Pelley is open to change. He wants golf to be a little less stuffy to attract a new fandom. Don't all sports want to stay relevant in the current climes? And for golf, they haven't found the magic ball yet either. So they're two sports still searching. Tennis, pretty robust, moving with the times. Football, we're seeing the VAR technology coming into that. They've got that woefully wrong, embarrassingly so, over the course of the past few months. So sports are trying to evolve, they're trying to change, they're trying to take in technology, use technology. There'll be a lot more changes to come, I've no doubt about it, because the world is a-changing, and I keep coming. How many times have I mentioned you and your boy Gus, Tom, when I've been out and about in town talking about the story you told me about your little boy doesn't consume sport as we would have as young boy? He's got no time now to watch a 90-minute football match. He wants to get the highlights afterwards. So the executives and the officials at these sports, they've got to be mindful of that, and that is why all of these changes, or mooted changes, are being put forward.
Didn't really work. We've seen it in tennis, haven't we? We've seen the sort of the IPL format trying to put on tennis didn't really catch fire, did it, on that particular occasion? I don't know whether that was because of the bloated calendar that a lot of those players have to try and deal with as well. But again, it's this trying to shorten the game, which is sad for purists out there, but the money men and younger generations don't want to sit through 5 days of a test match anymore.
Yeah, very valid point. And I think the tough part is balancing it now, because as you say, you've got the purist that still wants to sit and watch every ball for 5 days, and then you've got your younger audience, which is the future, isn't it? And I think a lot of these sports, especially like cricket and tennis that you just mentioned, are kind of in the middle. They cater a bit for the old and they cater a bit for the young, and they're trying to, you know, balance it out. But to your point, Tom, I don't always believe that shortening everything is the correct answer.
Your thoughts would be appreciated. You can text them through to us on 4001 if you want to have your say on any of the subjects of the day. We can get your thoughts through to us from our broadcast position up here as well. If you are in and around Brasti, come on down. Why? Because we've got the hashtag Kick Cancer team. They're down here at the moment. Chris and our man CVR are back from their exploits as well. They have been promising me the very first touch of the ball that they had went flying in and created something of a bit of history. But we haven't seen the video yet, fellas.
I'm going to get the video. That video will be shared with me in the next few moments. That way it will be up on social media, and there will be proof there that we did indeed complete the bin challenge.
Last week we were talking to a number of our listeners out there about a variety of sports. Somebody texted in saying we're not giving enough airtime to some of the other sports out there that are playing and enjoying huge success here in the region and elsewhere. That's why within the next half an hour we will be talking not just about netball here in the region, we're also going to be talking to a gold medalist from the Commonwealth Games that recently concluded over on the Gold Coast this time last week. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, though, we'll take a short break. When we come back, more sport live here on The Grill, live from Brasti.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Brasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Game on, yes. Let's get round the grounds now. Got live rugby for you. CVR's keeping an eye on the rugby for us. What can you tell us?
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you, the second of the Challenge Cup semi-finals, the Cardiff Blues taking on a POW, and it's the Cardiff Blues leading that one by 10 points to 7 tries by Gareth Anscombe and Jared Evans. And then, of course, ex-All Black captain Conrad Smith diving over for POW, and that try was converted by Tom Taylor.
That's what's happening in the rugby. What can I tell you about the cricket? Kings 11 Punjab now in reply to KKR. This is the live match in the Indian Premier League. KKR finishing with 191 runs for the loss of 7 wickets. No loss of wickets for Kings 11 Punjab yet. They are 9 without loss from the first over of their 20 overs. So they require another 183 runs with 10 wickets remaining and 19 overs to get them in as well. Knox for Lynn Kartik for the Knight Riders as they get to 191, which is a good score. What about the football? Let's go to the Premier League. Chris McCarthy.
48 minutes on the clock at the Hawthorns. It is the early kickoff. 2 Premier League games in total this afternoon. This, the opening. It is, of course, the Emirates FA Cup semi-final weekend. The big game later this evening sees Manchester United taking on Tottenham. That one is underway at 8:15. All eyes, though, on the Hawthorns. It is West Bromwich Albion taking on Liverpool. As I say, 3 minutes in to this second half, it remains West Brom 0, Liverpool 1. That goal from Danny Ings early on in this one. Just 3 minutes on the clock when the former Burnley striker struck. It was an opportune finish, to say the least. Good work down the left from Sadio Mane. The ball was laid off to him, I think it was by Jorginho Wijnaldum, into the path of Ings. Didn't think about it. One hit, left foot, past Ben Foster, into the bottom corner. Lovely finish that from Ings. And that is enough thus far to give Liverpool a 1-0 lead at the Hawthorns against relegation threatened West Bromwich Albion.
What's happening in the world of golf? CBR's keeping an eye on the leaderboards for us.
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you on the European Tour, of course, is the Trophy Hassan, which they are playing at the Royal Golf Club in Dar es Salaam. And that's the South African Eric van Rooyen. He's tied at the top of the leaderboard with Spaniard Alvaro Quiroz. They're on 7 under par. They're on hole 4 today. Dutchman Joost Luton, he's on 2 under par at 2 under par for the day, 4 under for the tournament. Other well-known names, there is Alexander Levy of France at 4 under par, as well as Austin Connolly of Canada at 4 under par. Then on the PGA Tour, of course, they're playing in the Valero Houston Open. They're down in Texas for this weekend. And what I can tell you is American Zach Johnson, he leads at 9 under par, tied at the top of the leaderboard with American Ryan Moore. They followed by Andrew Landry. As I said, they'll be teeing off a little bit later for their third rounds in Houston, Texas.
That's what's happening in the Gulf at the moment. Plenty of other sport as well. Got a couple of early kickoffs in Scotland and over in Spain. No change on the score lines on either of those one. Eibar still trailing Getafe in Spain by that single goal. And it is that single goal that separates Celtic from popping of
corks.
Corks.
Yes, indeed, it is. Hibernian 1, Celtic 0. Celtic with victory today at Easter Road will secure themselves a seventh successive Scottish Premiership. But it is remarkable with Rangers as woes in recent years. Celtic are now within two of matching the 9-in-a-row records that they themselves set, and then Rangers matched it under Walter Smith. And who's to say they can't go on and win 10 and break that record? They are the dominant force in Scottish football. They are on course for yet another domestic treble, regardless of the result today. Celtic will be champions come the end of the season, but Hibs are leading early stages of the second half. Jamie McLaren on the score sheet, the Kiwi on loan from Darmstadt, the German club at Hibernian this season. He was the man on the score sheet after just 24 minutes. So it remains Hibs 1, Celtic, champions-elect Celtic 0.
Let's talk a bit of boxing, because got a big night of boxing at the Echo Arena up in Liverpool a little later on today. A full card sees Sean Dodd taking on Tommy Coyle for the Commonwealth lightweight title. Conor Benn takes on Chris Truman, six rounds welterweight. Sam Eggington against Achilles Jabo for a super welt bite. 10 two-minute rounds for super featherweight for Natasha Jonas against Tuase Lahadji. And then Anthony Fowler takes on Ryan Toms, eight rounds for the super welterweight title. And then the big one a little later on. Well, it'll certainly be billed as the big one. 12 rounds, super welterweight fight, sees Amir Khan return to the ring. He's taking on Phil LaGreco for this one. Has Khan underestimated his opponent for his British comeback?
No, I don't think he has. I think Eddie Hearn and Amir Khan have done what we all expect to do in the boxing world, and that is set up a fight that he will win comfortably. I expect Amir Khan gets back in the winning circle, shall we say, and then from there, bigger fish and bigger fights are ahead. They want the UK Wembley showdown, don't they, with Kell Brook, and I guess Eddie Hearn, the master puppeteer, if you will, in the world of British boxing at this moment in time. It's up to him to create the narrative around that, to get interest back in Amir Khan. I think whoever has been advising Amir Khan, certainly over the last 4 or 5 years, I think needs to have a long, hard look at themselves in the mirror, Tom. He's made some questionable decisions going into the jungle on a reality TV show. I mean, you're a boxer, my good, you know. Worry about that once you've retired. I just think Amir's gone off the boil a little bit. He chased the bucks. Talks a good game, does Amir. If he was saying this right, if he was here right now, or maybe not be saying this to his face, but he talks a good game, Amir. He's chased the dollar. And, you know, for me, the Kell Brook fight should have happened 2 years ago, and then he should move on from there. Unfortunately, he's sold out, has Amir Khan, and this fight tonight, honestly speaking, it's a bit of a farce.
Sell out?
I can say that because he's not here, Carl.
I'm just having a good laugh, as you say, going to the jungle.
And I mean,
but I have to agree with Chris. I think he's lost a little bit of focus. And, you know, saying that, Chris, maybe this is what he needs, and maybe he'll eventually reach his full potential second time around.
Absolutely, and listen, he's buried the hatchet with Eddie Hearn. Eddie Hearn, who I've got huge respect for. I think he's done a wonderful job. The portfolio he's put together of boxers, of course, led by Anthony Joshua. He is a big cat now in the world of boxing, promoting as Eddie Hearn, and Amir Khan has swallowed his pride. He's parked himself in that stable, and he will hope that Eddie Hearn, over the course of the next 2-3 years, can negotiate himself into the last Vegas bouts again. First and foremost, though, it's got to be a sellout. Got to try and garner interest in a sellout between him and Kell Brook. Settle that debate, and then you build on from there.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting as well. I found it very interesting, that whole the celebrity jungle thing, and then making the decision once he's come out of there. I mean, what was he thinking? Because he didn't exactly. I mean, he might have got some fans from different parts of the world for what he did on that reality TV show, but he also got a lot of critics as well.
Absolutely, he did. I mean, it's just, again, if I was advising him, I would have said, listen, Amir, that all the reality jungle nonsense can come after your career. You're in your pomp right now. You should be in your pomp. And for me, I appreciate he was going through one or two personal issues with his wife or ex-wife. I think they're back together now. I mean, you can't keep up with Amir Khan. He's been one big soap show, so he has. And I'm not holding back. I don't know why I'm not holding back in Amir Khan, but I guess it's from the fact that I'm a passionate boxing fan. And when you look at the career of Amir Khan, you can't help but be frustrated. You know, he took apart Devin Alexander. He was superb in that fight. Barrera, he was good. But the fight that he really struck was Devin Alexander, and he never really kicked on from there. Questionable decisions made, and you know the decision to fight Saul Canelo Alvarez again was just ridiculous.
That fight is taking place this evening up in Liverpool at the Echo Arena, and of course we'll have the result for you tomorrow morning for those that can't stay up nice and late to watch it. Let's get back to the big talker of the day then. It is Arsene Wenger, who has said enough is enough. He's going to be making his way out of Arsenal Football Club at the end of this season. Thanks so much indeed for all of your comments on this one. A lot of people having their say with regards to what's next for Arsene, what's next for Arsenal as well. None more so than former players as well. So let's hear from a few of them. We mentioned him earlier. Thierry Henry is, well, He's a ledge up there, formerly at Highbury. He played at Emirates Stadium?
He did.
He would have played at the Emirates Stadium as well, wouldn't he? Yeah. There has been chat that he could be a replacement, but you think...
I question it.
You think it's too media? He's too media at the moment.
He's happy where he is. He's heading to the World Cup with Belgium. He's part of the coaching staff for Roberto Martinez. He's also, of course, a Sky Sports pundit. For some reason, I just don't see Thierry Henry. Maybe in the future... But who will replace Arsene Wenger? I'll tell you right now, it will not be Thierry Henry and it won't be Patrick Vieira.
Let's hear from Thierry Henry on the departure of Arsene Wenger.
You know, it's a sad day for me to see the big man leaving the club, although we all know that he has some games left. But I just hope that, you know, starting from Sunday, that against West Ham, people are going to go to the game, not only to support the team, but to give him a good exit. Is it a good time or a bad time? People will debate that. That was his time. He felt like he had to say it. My thing is, recently people were always confusing what the team was doing at the minute and his legacy. Once you announce that you're leaving, people are going to talk about your legacy. And his legacy is untouchable. I just heard Jurgen Klopp talking about Arsene Wenger. You know, you get used to the Arsenal fans talking highly about Arsene, ex-players, but managers, fans from other teams. And I remember when I used to play for Arsenal, people were talking about the way we were playing, not so much about what we did win, but the way we were doing it and how Arsene changed Arsenal into a well-recognized club in the world. So at the end of his era there, the team has to win the Europa League. It will be an amazing achievement, and Arsene actually never won in Europe before, so it will be a great way to give him a good exit. But I'm finally happy that now the talk that I can have, or we can all have, is about his legacy.
Those are the thoughts of Thierry Henry. He wants to concentrate on legacy. Well, I suppose that's going to be the other thing at the moment, isn't it? As people start jockeying for positions in terms of the run-in to an announcement about who would replace Arsene Wenger, there will be those that will want to throw their hat into consideration ring at the moment as well. But as you rightly said just before that, you know, they've got so many things to weigh up, because you don't want to upset your media employees if you start throwing your hat into a coaching
role. And that's it. That's why the likes of Luis Enrique out of a job, he can start the flirtation with the role. He can start doing that, and we're led to believe that talks have already begun with Luis Enrique. And you know, Arsenal will do their due diligence. There's no rush now. I guess that's the other beauty of it. With Arsene Wenger announcing that he is to leave, what are we? We're mid-April. The season over. That gives them 6 weeks, 8 weeks to go about a thorough process of looking and scouting and talking to people, ensuring you draw up a shortlist. I'm sure they will. They'll probably interview three or four. And then from there, they make the decision. They may well already have a man in mind. As I say, there's reports in the UK this afternoon saying that Luis Enrique is the number one then. But then again, Luis Enrique was number one for Chelsea 3 months ago. So you know the way the world football works. It works in mysterious ways. And we wish whoever it is that comes into that job all the very best, because it won't be easy. Despite the fact that Arsenal fans have been up in arms in recent years, the legacy fact of all of this, and that's what will happen over the next 4 weeks, we will concentrate on legacy, which in a roundabout way ramps up the pressure again, because the negativity will dissipate now. It's all about the legacy and what he's done at that football club, which means the new man coming in will know straight off the bat the enormity of the task at hand.
Who would be on your shortlist?
Well, I think, you know, Chris has obviously said the obvious choice. I think we can throw Carlos Ancelotti in there, but I kind of find the dark horse, I think, even could be Brendan Rodgers. Celtic have said that they will allow negotiations to take place, and I kind of think that if you're wanting to build if you're wanting to, a manager to be there for quite a long time, I kind of, as I say, fancy him, Tom. I think, you know, he's done a great, great job with Celtic. To me, he still did a great job with Liverpool. I felt that he was, you know, they treated him a little bit unfairly there. So I think, you know, he'd be another good contender to have a look at, for sure.
You heard it here first, CBR fancies Brendan Rodgers. So if you'd like to have your say, feel free to get those in. What about Ian Wright? Ian Wright, has he done his badges or not?
No. Stay away from Ian Wright. As good a player as he was, Tom, I just don't see Ian Wright as a manager.
But surely you would need to bring somebody in that's had experience in the top tier. You know, you mentioned Thierry Henry early on, Patrick Vieira. I honestly don't think these guys have got enough. As players, yes, you know, they got the experience. But as coaches, I don't believe they've got enough experience in the top tier to take on a big club like Arsenal.
And the fact that you're following on from Arsene, he has been at the core of that football club for 22 years. When you rip that out of the football club, I don't care all the restructuring that's gone on behind the scenes in the last few weeks, that will be a huge void. You need someone with personality, you need someone with experience. I personally think Carlo Ancelotti is perfect for that. It's whether Arsenal see Carlo Ancelotti as a stopgap or someone that can continue and build on the legacy, build on the foundations that have been left from Arsene Wenger. That's where I'd have my doubts. I think they may well go for a younger manager, a Luis Enrique, who plays a very progressive brand of football, a Brendan Rodgers. You're right, Carl. I don't think that's the worst shout. And I've been a huge defender of Brendan Rodgers. I'm a big fan of his. I know he's, in many respects, he's a paradox of himself at times, but he is fantastic. And if he were to get the job, I actually think he would go on and do a decent job at Arsenal.
We've heard Ian Wright, the name thrown into the mix. What about Robert Pires as well? Is he a man looking for a coaching job?
No, again, someone that has certainly not, that to my knowledge, has shown a propensity to move into coaching. Maybe a coaching role. As for the head coach role or the manager role, it won't be Robert Pires, but a man, of course, part of that Invincibles team, and a man that knows that football club very well, and a man who knows Arsene Wenger very well indeed.
Let's hear from two Arsenal legends, Ian Wright and Robert Pires, who both have had their say on the moving on of Arsene Wenger.
He made me think about football in such a meticulous way that every single thing I was doing that wasn't right is harming me. And everything that I was doing that was the right thing to do in respect of sleep, drinking water, training, resting, you know, was benefiting me. And I genuinely believed it. And he made me think that. And I thought like that till the end of my career.
Bergkamp's gone to the right, and there's Lundberg with a chance for Arsenal. Oh, and Perez surely! Goal!
It's very difficult to win the Premier League because you need to fight against Man City, Man United, Chelsea, Liverpool, Tottenham. And when you won the title, but in beating, I think it's unbelievable. Trophy, because for me it's a big trophy. So that's why I repeat, but I have a lot of great memories with Arsenal and of course with the teacher, Arsene Wenger.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai I Sport.
Substitution time down at the Hawthorns. West Bromwich Albion taking on Liverpool. Early kickoff in the Premier League. Chris McCarty, we've just seen Mr. Mane make his way off.
Yep.
And the Ox. The ox comes into it.
Yeah, it's good from Jurgen Klopp. He's just looking to keep minutes in the legs of his players. Doesn't want to I guess, take them totally out of the firing line ahead of that first leg of their UEFA Champions League semi-final against AS Roma. But you're right to point out, changes afoot, and he's made an awful lot of them. We've seen Roberto Firmino come on for the goal scorer. Danny Ings, it is Danny Ings' goal that separates West Bromwich Albion and Liverpool this afternoon. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, he's on for Sadio Mane. So Mane rested, Firmino and Oxlade-Chamberlain now on. I think Jurgen Klopp is looking to shut this game out. Of course, Champions League is his focus, undoubtedly it is. They will finish in the top four, but I'm sure Jurgen Klopp would still like to finish above a certain Manchester United in the Premier League table. Yes, City are champions, but the rest are playing now for second spot. Do that, win the Champions League, and I think you've got to say that is a phenomenal season for Liverpool, and that sets the foundations ahead of what they will hope will be a title run next season.
Can we talk about Manchester United for a moment? Because obviously that's going to be one of the big games to look forward to a little later on. We have got another game in the Premier League, which we're giving match commentary for. Obviously, we're not giving match commentary, but as a station, we'll be providing match commentary. We'll be talking to the team in just a few moments' time ahead of that game. But all eyes will then obviously be on the Emirates FA Cup semi-final. I love semi-finals.
I do love semi-finals. I just hate the fact that it's at Wembley.
We have quarterfinals and semi-finals.
Why?
I don't know. They seem to deliver more. I don't know what it is.
I agree with that. You're thinking back to 1999, Tom. Manchester United Arsenal at Villa Park is what you're thinking about there. But in all honesty, the only gripe I've got is they play at Wembley.
Just because it's the National Stadium, or given the fact that Spurs have been playing there of late?
Well, no, nothing to do with Spurs. They're there for reasons. But I just think you go to Wembley for the cup final. You don't rock up to Wembley for a semi-final. That needs to be whether you play it up at St James's Park, whether you go back to the old ground, Villa Park. I appreciate they're far smaller stadiums. You want to pack more fans in. But the fact that the Emirates FA Cup semi-finals are played at Wembley, that to me, undoubtedly the bottom line is, that's them trying to repay for them building the stadium in the first place. And I just think I'm a traditionalist on that front. I would like to have seen Manchester United, Tottenham, let's say for the sake of arguments, playing at St James's Park, is a little too further north. I don't know. Maybe a Emirates. Something like that. I know it's in London, but just change it up. Wembley should be, you go there, the ticker tape. Wembley is for the final. Once you've made the final, you get to grace the National Stadium. You shouldn't get to grace it for the semi-finals.
Lots of text coming in with regards to our conversation about what next at Arsenal Football Club. Zishan reckons Carlos Ancelotti is the man who's best suited to take over. Amar's been in touch as saying Tuchel of BVB will replace Wenger. We don't know if that's the case.
Yeah, Thomas Tuchel, not of BVB Borussia Dortmund anymore. Of course, he was relieved of his duties last season, at the end of last season. He is someone who I'm told, or at least we're led to believe, is PSG bound. He has agreed in principle a 2-year deal to replace Unai Emery. How that changes now that Arsene Wenger's available, of course Arsene Wenger with close ties to PSG, remains to be seen. But if Tuchel's available, then he undoubtedly would be one of the names on my list. He did wonders at Mainz, did great things at Dortmund. He is a visionary as well, someone that kind of ties in with the Jurgen Klopp, Pep Guardiola mould, and he's a young man that could put in his energies into restoring Arsenal to where the Arsenal fans clearly feel they believe, and that's at the top end, not just in the top six.
Another suggestion's come through there saying, what about Van Gaal?
No. No, Louis van Gaal, no. That would be not a wise move, I don't think.
I wouldn't mind having him back in the Premier League. He's quite a character.
It would be great to have him back.
I agree. I don't think he's a good match for Arsenal.
No, Arsenal. Absolutely not.
I will enjoy the post-match interviews.
flip-flopping back to Manchester United again, because obviously they're in action against Spurs a little later on. It's going to be interesting, isn't it? Because we've seen the mind games of Jose throughout the week as well, challenging players in that midweek game. I mean, to be fair to the Man United squad, they've played a lot of games this season, haven't they? And I mean, to have that one midweek ahead of a semi-final on the weekend as well in the FA Cup, it's been asking a lot of the players.
Yeah, the only good thing, I guess, the only saving grace from Manchester United's perspective is that Tottenham were asked to do likewise. They had Brighton on Tuesday evening. Manchester United at Jose Mourinho, 7 changes in total from the side that lost 1-0 to West Bromwich Albion. I watched the game start to finish. It was better. It was. I thought Paul Pogba did what he was asked to do. That was to keep things simple. He's a fine player. We know Paul Pogba's a good player. But he is, and I'll steal a phrase here that was coined by Gary Neville, I think it was, he's a YouTube footballer. And I get exactly what he means. He's always looking to do something spectacular so he can dab the haircuts. Just concentrate on your football, mate. That's all we need. All Manchester United fans need is Paul Pogba to be the player that they purchased and bought. Right now, he hasn't been that. And this is a huge game. It's a huge game for both clubs. I actually think it's bigger for Tottenham. I could bore you with that a little later, perhaps. I think it's a bigger game for Tottenham tonight than it is Manchester United. But there's a game. I've yet to see Paul Pogba in a big game truly dominating it. Tonight, go out there, Paul. Keep things simple and be the midfielder.
Oh, you're being a little bit harsh. Did you watch the City game? I thought he was pretty decent in the City game.
He didn't dominate, in fairness, and we'll break away from that to bring you yet another goal from you-know-who in the colour of red for Liverpool Football Club. It is the player who will undoubtedly be crowned, I think, anyway, PFA Player of the Year. It is Mohamed Salah. Make that goal number 41 of a quite remarkable season. First campaign at Liverpool Football Club. It's league goal 31 in the Premier League from the little Egyptian magician. He's been a breath of fresh air, and I'm saying that as a Manchester United fan. It's game after game after game. He's been scoring goals for fun. We watch this one here, and this is Liverpool at their very best. The front three linking up beautifully. It is Firmino into Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. He finds a beautiful pass, and that's what Chamberlain can do. A cross into Salah. Ben Foster comes out, and the little Egyptian Egyptian, just lifts it over Ben Foster as he comes to narrow the angle. It's a beautiful finish. It's what he's been doing all season long. Mo Salah has effectively ended this tie. It's West Bromwich Albion 0, Liverpool 2.
How many times have we seen him do that though, throughout the season? That little chip is amazing, isn't it?
He is Messi-esque. Listen, I'm not getting too carried away. Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo have done it for 10 seasons successively. He's done it for one, but he is growing in confidence, and I cannot wait to see him at the World Cup, because Egypt are in a group that they'll fancy their chances. Russia, the host, Saudi Arabia, Uruguay. Right. Yeah. If he's on this kind of form, Egypt, last 16 of the World Cup, you've heard it here first.
It's interesting, isn't it? And they'll be well supported, obviously, because carrying not just the hopes of the Egyptian nation, but also the hopes of the Arab nations around the world who will be well behind them. And I think Mo Salah has sort of taken on that role, hasn't he? He's become an ambassador for football from the Arab world.
Absolutely, and he looks comfortable with it. There are some players that could be, a little perturbed by it all. Not him. He looks relaxed. He plays with a smile on his face. There's an abandonment to everything that he does. And, you know, I'm such a fan, and it's, I guess it's one of those black marks against the name of Jose Mourinho. Didn't fancy him.
Yeah, okay, that's the one I want to pick up on. Why has he been so brilliant this season, and yet he's no stranger to the Premier League, and he hasn't hit the Premier League in previous seasons?
There's a couple of things for me, Tom. I think the fact he spent a few years over in Italy has helped him. I think his appreciation for space and the way that his movement is second to none, and I do truly feel that his time in Fiorentina and Roma have helped that. The other big thing that can't be forgotten is Jurgen Klopp. I think Jurgen Klopp's the kind of manager that gets the best out of players like Mohamed Salah. He sets up the team to go in and go and just essentially be yourself. Go and play with a freedom and abandonment. And he's done that, Mo Salah. And I think, you know, had that been with Mourinho, Mourinho is more concerned about going the opposite way as opposed to letting players off the leashes and going and doing what you do best. So a couple of combinations for me. I think his time in Italy undoubtedly has helped him just grow and mature as a footballer. And undoubtedly, Jurgen Klopp is his manager. That's the two big factors for me.
You've got to be asking yourself questions if you're Chelsea. De Bruyne, Salah, Lukaku. Expensive mistakes there.
I mean, De Bruyne and Salah. I mean, Mourinho didn't see the talent that they... Well, that's harsh. They were brought to the football club. He didn't feel at that point in their development they were right for that Chelsea team. They've gone away and they've proven them wrong. Kevin De Bruyne and Mo Salah, head and shoulders, the best players in the Premier League this season, and they will be the two men battling for PFA Player of the Year.
Not just under Mourinho, it's happened more recently as well. Loftus-Cheek, you see, the way he's shone since he's moved away from that club. Again, there would be that argument, isn't there, that with all the money in the world and the strength and depth when it comes to the squad, you are not giving talented players the potential to shine.
And I actually think part of the problem with that at Chelsea is it's a little disjointed, shall we say. They've got a great youth academy, they've won FA Youth Cups, they've been dominating from a youth perspective. However, there's no linear plan, there's no production line through. The revolving door of managers at the top team means that there can never be that link, because your manager's in and then he's gone after a season or two. And I think that's the area Roman Abramovich, if I had to be damning, and maybe one of the biggest criticisms, yes, it's fantastic, they've brought in some wonderful players and talent through, they've not been given a chance. The reason for that, in my belief, is because the system hasn't been in a place to allow that. The manager retention hasn't helped, and these young players have had to go elsewhere to get their first team opportunity.
Right, we'll have more from Chris, more from Carl, and more from you in just a little while.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.